Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we are going to cover the ongoing America 250 report series from the UBS Chief Investment Office. As you know, this series has been highlighting innovations out of the United States of America leading up to the 250th birthday of the USA coming up July 4th of this year. Joining me once again to continue with these conversations, glad to welcome back at our 1285 podcast studio here in New York, Kevin Dineen, Information Technology and Communication Services, Equity Strategist Americas from UBS CIO. Kevin, great to be back at the mic with you. Thank you for dropping by today.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
So, Kevin, you recently joined us with our colleague, Kurt Ryman, but you're joining us today to talk about the next edition of this ongoing publication series, which focuses on the development and impact of the Internet. So, to begin, Kevin, can you provide our listeners, our clients, with a brief history of the Internet, perhaps leading up to the burst of the dot-com bubble, because I know there's a lot to talk about post that.
Right. Yeah. No, that's great. I think it's really interesting because I think most people think about the Internet being born maybe in the mid-90s, 1995, when Netscape went public. But I think it actually goes back a lot further than this. I would actually say that the Internet, the birth of the Internet began during Cold War. In 1959, there was a young Polish emigre working at Rand Corp, sort of like a consulting company, and he realized that the U.S. had a big problem. The U.S. military was dependent on AT&T's network for its communication system, and Ma Bell's network was incredibly resilient. It pioneered the notion of five-nines reliability, which means the network would be down for only 5 minutes out of the year. But it was really centralized, so that caused a big problem, because a few well-placed missiles would effectively wipe out the entire communications network for the U.S. military. So Paul Bowron realized that this was a problem, and he developed what we now refer to as packet-based networking, where instead of one continuous stream of data going down a physical end-to-end circuit, so say New York to California, that sort of aggregated up like a Christmas tree, Bowron's concept was, let's break this information stream, this data stream, into small packets and send it across independent nodes so that if any one node went down, the packet could be rerouted via the other nodes. So that was really the birth of it. And that notion of packet networking is still with us today. It's absolutely fundamental. But, I think what's really interesting about the history of the Internet is, just as in the title of the note, E Pluribus Unum, from many, one. The Internet wasn't developed by one group of people or one effort or one sort of work stream. It was really a series of independent developments, independent efforts that all sort of came together to form what is now, essentially the backbone of communications globally. So we had the notion of packet networking in 1959. In the early 1970s, Corning developed low-loss fiber. That enabled fiber optic communications. The first calls on fiber optic lines were in 1977 by AT&T and GTE. If we fast forward a little bit, there's a lot going on. I'm skipping around just to keep us moving. If we fast forward to the 1990s, you had PCs everywhere, right? And you also had distributed computing. You had big research network labs that needed to be connected. You had big government IT assets that needed to be connected. And that led to the development of three things, all of which came together to work. TCP/IP and Ethernet, those are traffic protocols that help manage traffic across the Internet. And then the development of the router by Cisco. Cisco wasn't the first company to make a router, but they had some innovation. They made some smart acquisitions, and they really scaled the business. And then we get into 1995 when Netscape IPO'd, which is when, as I mentioned, when a lot of people think the Internet was born. And that was important because Netscape, the browser, made the web graphical. It made it usable for the mass market, for the regular consumer. It took the Internet out of the technologist realm and put it out into the public sphere. And importantly, it removed the so-called walled gardens of services that are now defunct, like America Online or Prodigy or CompuServe. And I would say one of the biggest developments was actually in the late 90s with the development of the commercialization of a technology called DWDM, Dense Wave Division Multiplexing. And what this did was if you think about the internet, at the end of the day, it's packets of data being converted into light and traveling over a fiber optic cable at the most fundamental level. What Steve Alexander at Ciena Corp figured out was at that point, up until the late 90s, each data stream traveled on its own strand of fiber. So if you were to cut open a fiber optic cable, maybe there'd be 20, 40, 60 individual strands of fiber, meaning they could carry 20, 40, 60 customers worth of traffic. What Steve Alexander did was he commercialized DWDM. DWDM is simply taking multiple colors of light, shooting it through a prism, and then shooting that single white light down the fiber, and then shooting it through a prism again on the other side to separate it out. So that was really interesting because that enabled like this massive reduction in the cost per bit of traffic. But in a way, I think that is actually the commercialization of DWDM is actually what set the stage for the collapse of the dot-com bubble. Now, there's a lot of things we can point to with the dot-com bubble, and I think bubbles and subsequent busts are never one thing, but you know, for sure, sock puppets selling dog food online were not really a viable.
Pets.com.
Yeah, wasn't a viable business, as sure. We found out. There was accounting fraud. There was vendor financing. But what DWDM did was effectively make all the hundreds of billions of dollars that were invested into networks in the decade before it was commercialized. It made all of those investments economically unviable, and it caused a collapse in pricing of data traffic. And I think that as much as anything is what was one of the main catalysts for the internet.
Well, it's a fascinating history which extends back a lot further than many perhaps would suspect. I recall in computer lab in the mid-90s in elementary school on Netscape Navigator on the multicolored Macs. So that's my memory of it. I still have the AOL.
Well, I remember Commodore PET 2s when I was in fifth grade, Dan. So I guess
that predates
I go back
me a bit.
That goes back.
You went on that one.
And I had a VIC 20, which I still wish I had. That was an awesome computer.
So we hit a bit of a speed bump with the dot-com bubble burst. 1999, 2000. Post that event, Kevin, how has the internet infrastructure evolved? Fast forward to where we are today, and what impact has the internet had on economic globalization, maybe in terms of communication, productivity, and even commerce?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think ultimately the internet made the world a smaller place. It democratized a lot of technology. You think about the aftershocks of the dot-com bust. You had a lot of cheap fiber laying around in the ground. And, you know, economics 101, supply creates its own demand. So we had Amazon pivot from selling books to dominating e-commerce. We had two guys at Stanford decide to make the world's information searchable. And out of that, we have Google. We had a young Mark Zuckerberg drop out of Harvard and move out to California, and he founded Facebook, now Meta Platforms. And the technology continued to develop. We had, you know, I think it's safe to say that we have fiber optic speeds increasing every year. We have the cost per bit of moving traffic around declining by about 35% per year. And the internet literally is the fundamental bedrock that I think all technology is built on. So if you think about even wireless, I think as we have deployed 5G wireless, I think it's fair to say wireless networks have become nothing more than fiber optic networks with a radio on the end of them.
In terms of where to from here, what might be the next wave of innovation tied to the internet?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more development around speeds and feeds. We're going to see 1.6 terabit optical capacity be deployed. That's like 160,000 high-def pictures going down a single optical fiber every second. I mean, it's a speed and a capacity I think is almost unimaginable. I think you're going to see the internet be the underpinning for 6G wireless, which will make we'll get the sub-millisecond latency in wireless. I think that's going to enable sort of new wireless experiences, maybe even holographic communications. And also haptic communications, where you'll actually feel things physically on your device. And I think it's going to be, you know, an important part of what happens with AI. I think AI will become this diffused layer of intelligence that rides on top of a network and that will put artificial intelligence in your pocket in the form of a smartphone or on your person in the form of a wearable device. But I think what's important is all of this intelligence will be networked and connected.
Kevin, fascinating conversation today. Thank you very much for dropping by the studio, spending some time with our listeners and clients, and as always, look forward to our next conversation.
Great. Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.